This is Lynn Benton Tractor's Newsmakers with Brent DeHart and Dave Bourne, presented by Les Schwab Tires and sponsored in part by Furbish, a salvage place, and Kennedy Tax Solutions. Live, local talk that matters to you. Now, live from Dallas Retirement Center, here's Brent and Dave.
And of course, we have to thank Capital Coffee, Squirrels Taxi Service, and Coat of Arms for our special Veterans Day broadcast here at Dallas Retirement Village. And I'm here with Brent DeHart, and we've been talking to some great veterans about their service today on this Veterans Day.
Welcome back, everyone. Walt Schrader is our guest today. It's we're getting some great stories here from some of the veterans that are residents out here at Dallas Retirement Center, Dallas Retirement Village, it's actually called, which is beautiful out here. And I don't think of myself as a military family, but you know what? When I think about it, of course, as I said at the top of the last hour, I've got my father served for a couple of years in the Army during the Korean War. My uncle was a major, U.S. Air Force, retired. My father-in-law served in the Navy during the late 40s, early 50s, and of course now my son is a U.S. Marine Corps officer. So there is some service in my family, which I'm always proud of. None of my siblings nor I have served, but my very best friend, best man at my wedding, Lieutenant Commander Mark Watson, was lucky enough to have a great career coming out of the academy in Annapolis and served as a naval officer for 20 years, including a few tours in F-14s.
Wow.
That thing, that aircraft made famous by Tom Cruise. Tom Cruise and Top Gun, which he can't stand that movie, of course.
Of course.
Just too unrealistic and choosy for someone who actually
served. I thought it
served.
Was too realistic. Come on now.
Anyway, welcome back, everyone. Happy Veterans Day as we honor them. Walt Schrader is with us. Schroeder is with us. And Walt served in the Army back in
52.
And so did you get volunteered to do that, or did you just sign up to say, I'm ready to serve?
Well, I had graduated from college in 49 and had a job and was working for almost a year when I got a little note saying your friends and neighbors have decided that you should serve. And so I was drafted along with a whole bunch of other fellows, averaging probably 22 or 23 years of age. So we were all a little older than the RA fellows that came in later.
Wow. So you just get a little note. By the way, I know you graduated from college and you have a job, but now you're going to be in the Army.
Yep.
Wow. Okay. How'd you take that news?
Well, it was something that had to be done. I just took it the way it was, and we just did the best we could.
Well, of course, the World War II was over, but the world was not a particularly safe place.
Right.
So there's still...
Yeah, they called it the Cold War. And we were in the occupation forces as well as the NATO forces to keep the Russians from coming over. And we were stationed at Schweinhardt in Germany. And they were close to the Fulda Gap, which is where they expected the Russians to come through. And apparently there were enough of us there that we scared them.
Well, that's so good, you're right.
Fortunately, they never came through.
Yeah.
So you're shipped off, and you say, to Europe, and you're stationed in Germany. At that time, part of Germany is west, right?
Yes,
part of
east.
Germany is Soviet.
Right.
And there's no wall that separates you. It was you. It was you and your people that separated liberty from the Soviets.
Yes, that's right.
Wow, that's incredible. What was your job? Did you have a job while you were there?
Sir. I was in a weapons squad. I was at a bazooka gunners. And then later on, a squad leader. But my main job was a rocket launcher.
Wow. Bazooka squad rocket launcher. So if we brought one in right now, would you be able to operate that thing and fire?
No, because they've changed so much. Actually, we started out with a 2.36 rocket launcher. And then while I was in there, we went to the 3.5 rocket launcher, the bigger one. And so I learned to use both of them.
Wow, what does that feel like against your shoulder when you let that thing go?
Well, it worked fine.
Yeah? You're young and strapping and young and strong. Yeah. Where do you practice something like that? You got to learn how to do it, right?
Well, you had ranges and stuff where you did some of that shooting, rifle shooting and machine guns and rocket launchers and stuff. So we all had a chance to do some of that. So you had the feel of it.
So they're bringing you out of your civilian life, and you just served for 2 years. They bring you in and completely disrupt you, and then you put on the uniform. You didn't elect for an officer's commission, even though you're a college graduate, because that would have been a completely different commitment, right?
About half of the fellows that were drafted at the same time were college graduates. So we had a real interesting group of mature fellows compared to the RAs at 18 and 19.
What's an RA?
Like,
what's an RA?
Regular Army.
Oh, hey. Okay. So thank you. Yeah.
Acronyms.
So, no acronyms.
I'm sorry.
That's all right. We get that a lot from the Army guys.
There is always. Okay. So what did you feel was of most value coming out to you and your perspective for the rest of your life coming out of the service?
Well, just having that experience that most people don't have was very valuable. Made some very good friends, good buddies. Saw a lot of country, and I was very fortunate in that I had some weekends off, 3-day passes, and some 14-day passes.
Wow.
So I had a chance to travel all over Europe, East or Central and North Europe, while we were there. And they didn't miss me at all, I don't think.
Really? They will operate without you. So that must have been quite an exposure to being in Northern Europe there. And, of course, you're not in World War II battlefields, but did you feel a sense of, while you're there, how frightening was it that the Russians were so close, or the Soviets, we'll call them?
Well, not too bad. We just realized we were going to have to fight them if necessary, and we realized we wouldn't be able to stand up very long. But we stopped them long enough to let the troops behind would come in.
Wow. So he's literally there as a part-time barrier.
Yeah.
Because if they did decide they wanted to take the rest of the Germany, that you didn't have enough men and personnel to even hold them back.
But I think there were enough of us there that it kept them from attacking. They didn't want to fight that big a battle.
Well, you... Wow. I think historically how important that was for Germany. Of course, the wall went up later, separating East and West Germany, fell in 1989. But at the time, it was just you and some of your comrades who were college graduates and working just a short time before that.
Not everybody was a college graduate, but many of them, over half of them probably were.
Wow. And so you were telling us before the show started that you have some German heritage. So did that make you a little bit more welcoming to them?
Yes, it was. In fact, the Germans were very, very friendly. I had no trouble. And I'm not sure about the other guys that didn't have German names, but it sure worked out for me. And they treated us very well. And my wife and I went back again 5 years later. I had a sabbatical leave. And so I had 2.5 months on it, so my wife and I went over, and we went again to Germany, some of the same places I had been. But I went to a little town where my great-grandfather was the pastor of the church.
Wow.
And that was very interesting. We went to the church, and it was exactly the same service as the Lutheran church service in this country. After the church, I spoke to the pastor, and he spoke some English. And he told me there was a lady in that town whose grandfather was a good friend of my great-grandfather's. Went to see her, and she said, I have a picture of him. She couldn't speak English, but let me know she had a picture of him. I said, that would be wonderful. So she looked for it and said, I can't find it. I'll send it to you. I gave her my address. She sent it to me, and 2 weeks later, there it came.
Wow.
And then the pastor told me my great-grandfather was buried in the local cemetery. Over there and saw that great big headstone. So it was a wonderful experience. I saw other distant relatives also over there. And I had several in the Russian zone. I could not see them, of course. But it was a good experience.
It's amazing how small the world can become when we're not at conflict. You're going from a world of separation and barriers to a very small world that has that kind of history. So you have, of course, in Northern Europe, Northern Germany, there were a lot of Lutherans. Your great-grandfather's a Lutheran pastor. They have a lot of tradition. I know because I married a Lutheran. So we're talking to Walt Schroeder, who served in the Army in 1950 to 1952 and was part of the forces, the occupation forces that were occupying Germany at the time. Germany has been our ally for so long, we forget that we were occupying Japan after the war, and we were occupying Germany just as the Soviets were. And we were the occupation force, and Walt was right there serving. And if need be, he was going to strap on that bazooka.
Yeah.
Right? That rocket. How far do those things go? Well,
a quarter mile.
Wow. That's crazy.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, we went through Yukon maneuvers, which we had the French and English and the own forces together, divided up into different sides. And that was kind of interesting, too. We did a lot of heavy training, very, very heavy training every day, except if we had a furlough or days off or something. Or a weekend, so we had lots of good training. So we think we could have handled them for a while.
Good,
but I feel real bad after seeing the last two fellows here that really did something in the service.
I think you did a lot too, sir.
We were ready for them, but glad they didn't come.
We are glad that you were ready. Thank for you. Sure.
Wow. Thank you for keeping us safe. We had a bumper sticker in our truck, and it was one of my young sons that put it on and always said, Land of the Free, because of the brave.
That's right.
We want to thank you for your service and your courage on this special Veterans Day Newsmakers. We're going to take a quick break, but we're going to come right back. We're at Dallas Retirement Village and more veterans to come with their stories. This is Brent DeHart with Dave Warren. Stick with us. We're here on 1430 KYKN.
Now, back to Len Benton Tractor's Newsmakers with Brent DeHart and Dave Bourne, presented by Les Schwab Tires and sponsored in part by Furbish, a salvage place, and Kennedy Tax Solutions. Back to Brent and Dave, live from Dallas Retirement Center on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
And our special broadcast here at Dallas Retirement Village is brought to you in part by Dunright Plumbing, the car shop in Dallas, and, of course, Color Tile. Welcome back to Newsmakers.
Welcome back, everyone. This is Brent DeHart with Dave Bourne. And, you know, Dave, sometimes people forget the very vital role it takes of keeping the peace.
Yes.
You don't always have to be firing your weapon. You don't have to be dropping bombs. Bombs and I still this is a little political, but a perspective, you know, when the Gulf Wars happened and everybody wanted to demand from George Bush, when are the troops coming out, when are you going to withdraw, when are you going to leave the country? And I thought, we're still in Korea,
right?
We're still in Germany, we're still in Turkey, right? It's like we've been there since for 50, 60 years, right? And it's like nobody's saying we're going to pull out of South Korea because it keeps the peace.
Yeah.
And Germany, it helps keep the peace and the balance of power and makes the world a safer place. So, I mean,
I know some guys that sign up, they want to be assigned to Germany or they want to see the world. You know, I know my stepson, he's in the Navy. He has gone around to different ports around the world, and he's sent pictures back, and we're just like, we're jelly. I mean, geez.
Yeah.
I haven't been out of the country, and here he is sailing around the world. So
yeah, it can be a great career, but we can't forget, and I think Americans do, we get a sense of complacency.
Yes.
And we get a sense of, especially people that are more dove-like than hawk-like, but you know, there is a need for what these gentlemen and women do. There's a need every day, every year.
Sure.
It's when we're in conflict, sure, but to avoid giving in conflict, right? And sometimes it's humanitarian missions, and sometimes it is peacekeeping missions, and sometimes it's just the show of, hey, we're going to protect ourselves.
A show of force.
So we want to thank Schroeder. We want to welcome Smokey. Now, Smokey, that's not your real name.
Yes, it is.
That's your name. That's what says
my
your birth certificate.
Yes,
that is too cool for words.
Private Smokey Bidler.
Petty officer.
I'm sorry. Petty officer.
Yeah, get it right.
It doesn't say on your uniform.
No, the emblem is a crow, which is typical of Navy petty officers.
Okay.
But see, I'm a civilian, so I don't really know those things.
And a petty officer is a rank that's separate. It's kind of in the middle, separate between enlisted and an officer. It's a special kind of officer, right?
Is,
or is it a track?
It's a non-commissioned officer.
Okay.
as far as the Navy goes, that's how petty officers work. And petty officers start at E4 and go on up to E9 on that rare occasion. But from E4 to E9, that's your petty officers from 3rd, 2nd, 1st, chiefs, senior chiefs, master chiefs, and then master chief petty officer of the Navy during certain times and whatnot.
How many guys do you have underneath you?
Well, when I was in, I had at one point, I had about a dozen guys underneath me. And then at another point, I had probably 50 guys.
Nice.
So
Smokey, what you were in the Navy. Yes. To clarify this, you served in the Navy during what years?
I was in from 1993 to 2004.
Oh, that's a good run.
Wow.
And so obviously when you came in, you probably started as an E1.
Yes.
And worked your way up. At a certain point, your career takes a little bit of a track. And I think petty officers are fascinating ranks, and they have very specific roles sometimes, don't you, by occupation. And I've toured a couple of naval ships, and you go through, and there's a special area for where the petty officers are. It's separate. And a good CO, a good commander of that ship, knows that the petty officers run the joint.
It's mainly the chiefs that run the ship.
The chief petty officers, the CPOs.
Yeah, the CPOs run the show. The officers will direct, but the CPOs are the ones who really run the show.
Well, those were some interesting years. Obviously, we didn't have the draft, so you elected to join the Navy in 1993.
Yep.
Is that still, we were in conflict in Iraq?
We'd have pop-up incidences at that point in time, because the main stuff for the Gulf War was 91, 92 for the first Gulf War. Mm-hmm. And then we'd have little pop-up things here and there. But
why did you choose, why did you select and decide, I'm going to go serve?
For me, it was, part of it was I can go get some money for college. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people do that because you pay in your first year, you pay in, I'm not sure what it is now, but when I was in, you paid $100 a month for the first year you were in. So you paid in $1,200. And then they gave you all the rest of it.
Wow.
Once you finally decided that you were going to go to school, you pay in $1,200, they give you the rest of it. And wow. I know things have changed now with the post 9/11 GI bills, and now they have a forever GI bill. And so
is this something you would recommend young people who have not decided on college or not decided on a career path to go to
do? It would be a great thing to do for me. I grew up in Central Oregon, and, you know, you can work on ranches and farms, work in the resort industry, go to school if you want to, and sometimes it's hard to get out of a small town. And so if you're looking at to get out of a small town, you can join the armed forces. They give you training. You can go to school, get out, see the world.
Mm-hmm. We're talking to Petty Officer Smokey Bittler, right?
Yep.
The U.S. Navy, was in for 11 years or so. And here at Dallas Retirement Village, there's a lot of great veterans out here. We're in a special two-hour Newsmakers, although we could probably stay for 2 days and hear some of these great stories. I kind of want to come back and take some of these guys out to dinner, right?
Right.
And just talk to me, hear their stories. So, Smokey, tell us a little bit. Obviously, you're Navy, so were you shipbound most of the time?
No, I am actually a little-known faction, and a lot of us like to say this, we're proud dirt sailors.
Dirt sailors.
Yeah.
I had the new one on me, dirt sailors. Okay.
Yeah. We, you know, I started off my career working in munitions on torpedoes for submarines and surface, mostly in the submarine community, and kind of stalled out, and I decided, let's change jobs a little bit. Let's kind of take a little bit different direction. So I cross-rated over into the Seabees as a builder.
Oh, okay. Familiar with that.
Yeah. And so that's given me a lot of good lifelong skills and whatnot, and opened up more job opportunities once I got out to be able to pursue something in the private sector.
So the Seabees were famous, made famous by the South Pacific, the musical. If that's where most people's exposure of hearing Seabees, and or, it sounds so much
or like... Or the movie The Fighting Seabees with John Wayne.
There you go. I remember that one.
And you think SEA for C because it's Navies and BEE, right? But it actually stands for the letter CVs, Construction Battalions.
Yes.
So you're part of a construction battalion, and that's why you're a dirt sailor.
Yes.
So what kinds of things did you learn and were tasked to build?
With CBs, you come in, we're all self-contained. We have our equipment operators, our electricians, our plumbers, our builders, our steel workers work all together. We come in right in behind the Marines. Once they land, establish a beachhead, we put up bases and whatnot for them. And repair airfields, set up airfields, and we keep moving right along. The mission has changed a little bit over the years now, especially with stuff in Iraq and Afghanistan. We do a lot more rebuilding of areas, building schools for the local communities, drilling wells, getting those areas rehabilitated and back to livable conditions for the people.
Wow. All right. So not like you stayed stateside or anything. How many different areas were you sent to during your service?
I didn't get around much just due to how things worked out. But I was stationed in Hawaii for 3.5 years. And that was
tough duty.
Very eye-opening in a historical perspective. Cause
sure.
I'm real big into World War II history and stuff. I had uncles and stuff that were in that war, and just being there where the war started for America, World War II, it was just
very inspiring.
Yeah,
it's so breathtaking. If you go to, you have to go to the Pearl Harbor Memorial, of course, and how solemn that is, and you get into some of the stories and history there. So you got there after the first Gulf War. What 9/11 happens, and you're still wearing the uniform. What are your thoughts?
I had a really hard time with that because at that time I was not necessarily in limbo. I was in the reserves, but I was also going to school for structural fire science and emergency medical services, becoming a paramedic and whatnot. And so I was torn between, do I try to find my way to New York City to try and help out there and help my brothers and sisters in the fire service? Or do I sit here and wait for that phone call saying, pack up, we're headed out?
Yeah.
And it was that day I got to work, and we just moved into a new house. So I didn't have TV yet. And I drove to work, didn't hear anything on the radio. And I get to work, my boss goes, did you hear what happened in New York? I was like, no. And then the news came on, and I was like, I need to go home and pack. So I went home, packed, and I was home maybe 20, 30 minutes. And one of the people out of my unit called me and said, we're on 24-hour notice, so be ready to go. I said, I'm packing my bag right now. So.
Wow. So we're talking, by the way, with Smokey Bittler, Petty Officer, U.S. Navy, about his experiences. They are in the CBs, gosh, you're going to give credit to them. It's so many roles in the military. There's a guy that kicks in doors. There's a guy that fires bazookas like we had in before the segment. And there are people in the diplomatic corps. And then you say, the CBs hit the beach after the Marines, and you have to build or rebuild airfields, emergency shelters, hospitals, schools, all of those things, maybe bridges and dams, mm-hmm. and all of this infrastructure. It's so critical for our fighting men and women to be able to do the job that they
sure.
do. And it just, you think about all of these different parts of the body, of the whole, and we're so appreciative, Smokey, of your service. And you were there a long time. Do you remain in the
reserve? No, I've since gotten out. So,
all right. Well, we want to thank you for serving in the Navy, and thanks for being on the air here with KYKN. We're going to take another break and come back from Dallas Retirement Village. It is a special 2-hour Veterans Day broadcast with Brent DeHart and Dave Horn on 1430 KYKN.
This is Lynn Benton Tractors Newsmakers with Brent and Dave, presented by Les Schwab Tires and sponsored in part by Furbish, a salvage place, and Kennedy Tax Solutions. Now, live from Dallas Retirement Center, here's Brent and Dave.
This is Rich Kansky, and this segment of Newsmakers is brought to you by Green Acres Landscape.
And this special broadcast at Dallas Retirement Village is also brought to you by Stu's Auto Service, Jackson's Body Shop, Synergize Auto, and Bari Restaurant and Bar.
And welcome back, folks. This is Brent DeHart with Dave Bourne. We are talking at Dallas Retirement Village with every veteran we get our hands on.
Yeah.
Such great stories, people of all different types of services in different eras from World War II to the Gulf Complex. So we welcome with us David Fletcher to join us. David, thanks for joining us.
Well, you're quite welcome.
We're talking during the break. You served starting in 1959. You were encouraged, shall we say, to join the Army?
That's right. The draft was still very much in effect. And I didn't wait for my draft call, but it made sense to get in and do my duty and get out so you can get on with your life. Because if you were deferred, then they could call you until your late 20s, which could be really inconvenient.
Really?
Sure.
So the expectation is we were probably going to get it anyway. So
right.
Let's get in and go.
So as I say, and I don't mean to demean it, when people say thank you for your service, it's a bit ironic. You didn't have a choice. But there you are.
Well, you did. Yeah, you were in service to the nation, and they tapped you, and you said, it's my duty. I'm going to go.
So they started me off in the artillery. Basic training, Fort Dix, New Jersey. I'm from New England originally, so you went to Fort Dix. And from there, they shipped me to Fort Sill, Oklahoma, for the artillery training. And the thing I remember most about Oklahoma in the autumn was magnificent sunsets, just beautiful. And we'll leave it there. Then they shipped me over. It was the 3rd of February of 1960. We left New York City. 10 degrees above zero, utterly cold, but crystal clear. It was quite a motion picture sight, leaving in the morning New York Harbor with the Statue of Liberty glistening in the light, and off we went to Germany. Well, in the meanwhile, we had 9 days on a crammed troop ship, more like a cattle boat, and I was in the first compartment forward, lowest deck. And in the middle of the night, the storms got very rough, and you all of a sudden were kept rising, and then it would crash down.
It's probably not very conducive to good sleep.
No, because a lot of people got sick, and then that was a problem. But anyway, we finally got over there. And it was interesting. We arrived at Bremerhaven, the port in Germany. And, of course, we'd been given all this pumped-up message. We were going over to save Europe from the Russians, et cetera, et cetera. And as the vessel turns into the Elbe, into the dock at Bremerhaven, just across the estuary and the docks over there, is this large freighter, white smokestack, red stripes, and a great big gold hammer and sickle on the funnel.
Wow.
And, you know, you begin to wonder.
It's that close. It's just that close.
Well, the thing is, they were carrying on a commercial interlude with the Russians, which was probably good, better than fighting. But it was kind of interesting, you know, the hype we got, the big bad Russians, and then there's their freighter sitting right across the water when we arrived. But anyway.
We're talking to David Fletcher. How old were you at the time?
Oh, I was 20.
You're 20 years old. You signed up to join the Army. So you're this green private right?
Yes.
And probably green-faced from all that sea excursion.
You
must have wondered, did I join the Army or the Navy here? You're on the ship for 9 days. You arrive in Germany. A little historical perspective. This is the era of Khrushchev, right?
This is the era of the Cold War.
Right.
That was very cold and subsequently got very hot.
Yes.
Whilst I was there.
Yes.
Because after I was there a year, the Berlin crisis started, which ultimately led to the building of the Berlin Wall. And I started off in the artillery. I got to my post, and they were short of medics. And then the chaplain, I was active in the Episcopal Church at the time. The chaplain happened to be an Episcopal priest, and he did a lot of extra duties, religious duties, for the listening post along the East German border. So he wanted a fellow traveler to go with him. So I wound up transferring from the artillery to the medics with the doctor. And at night, or sometimes on the weekends, I was serving with the chaplain, which was at least a constructive effort over something destructive like the artillery. Necessary, but it sort of helped my conscience. I had a feeling I was doing something more positive.
Another role we haven't even talked about is the role of men of faith and people that serve as chaplains and try to keep spirits.
I really give a lot of credit for the chaplains, because the military is not set up really in their motivation, and so much depends on the unit commanders, or even on the divisional and regimental people, what their attitude is. And some of them, because they couldn't come out and say it, but you know, the chaplain was just a necessary evil. He just got in the way. He diverted the men's attention from what they should be doing, being big, bad, hard-ass people. In general, though, a lot, I think, depended on the chaplain, how he was able to approach the military superiors.
Mm-hmm.
And some chaplains got very doctrinaire about the soldiers, and soldiers will be soldiers, especially if in a foreign country, and a lot of opportunities for new adventures of the spirit and the flesh. And some chaplains handle that pretty good, and other ones get very doctrinaire about it, which was counterproductive.
We're talking to David Fletcher about his service in the Army from 1959 for a few years, and that was a really interesting point in history. We talked about you're there during the Berlin crisis.
I was there when it heated up.
How is that information coming to you? How are you responding to that? What are your thoughts and worries at the time?
Well,
I mean, you're right there. You're in Germany. And
I'm in Germany. We're about
hot as it's been since the war.
60 miles, maybe 80 miles from the nearest East German border. And the Cold War was there. We knew things were tight, but it heated up. And we knew because they began issuing new equipment, new rifles, sharp bayonets. And some units actually had live ammunition. Now, I was a medic, and I'd have to travel out with the tanks as they went out on maneuvers. And the maneuvers, you could tell, got more realistic and longer. We weren't right on the border, as I say, but if things heated up, we were sort of the first major force that would go up to meet the invasion. And basically, realistically, our mission was to hold 36 hours. That was the expectation. Or actually, I was told later, they thought if we held for 24 hours, we were doing our job.
Wow. So, was there thoughts that maybe the Soviets would cross into the Western held?
Very much so.
And was there thoughts that you had to prevent the wall from being built, or that was probably a better solution than tanks?
No, the wall. The wall was sort of secondary. It was, the initial feeling was the East Germans would come, but the Russians would be with their foot in their backside pushing them and supporting them militarily.
Wow, it must have been quite a time of high tension.
It was. I mean, nothing ultimately happened, but the psychology of a hot wall was very much there. In fact, it was almost some people who had been, we had still a few veterans in the Second World War around, and they said that was more difficult, because if you've actually got the real war going, it kind of breaks the tension and you've got that energy going, the firing and the fighting. But if this, is it going to happen? Is it? Maybe. No, that is, for some people, more difficult to live with.
All right, we've been talking to David Fletcher. We're going to take another quick break and get to our last guest. But we want to take an opportunity. I know that you felt you had to serve, but we appreciate you being there anyway. What a great time in history, but a fascinating time in history, because this is happening to you and everybody serving in Germany at the same time things are heating up halfway across the world, or all the way across the world in Vietnam, and America's involved. Yeah. All over this planet. We can never forget, when their bullets are not flying, there's still people doing work for us in saving democracy and saving our freedoms. David, thank you. Thank you for being with us on KYKN. We really appreciate it here at the Dallas Retirement Village.
Well, thank you, and appreciate your interest in coming to us.
Yes, I'd love to hear your perspective. So many people are darn younger than we are, isn't it?
No,
they don't
right.
remember. They weren't here. But we're going to have one more guest here in our special two-hour Newsmakers. This is Brent DeHart with Dave Bourne, and we're going to come right back on 1430 KYKN.
Now, back to Len Benton Tractor's Newsmakers with Brent DeHart and Dave Bourne. Presented by Les Schwab Tires and sponsored in part by Furbish, a salvage place, and Kennedy Tax Solutions. Back to Brent and Dave, live from Dallas Retirement Center on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
Our special broadcast here at Dallas Retirement Village on this Veterans Day is brought to you in part by Advantage Heating and Air Conditioning, Sportsman's Warehouse, and our friends at Boone Ridge Senior Living Center. And welcome back to Newsmakers in our final segment, Brent.
Final segment, special two-hour. I hope you've been with us the whole time. If not, you can always listen to the podcast on the KYKN website on the Newsmaker Archives. We were talking to all these veterans from all different eras, from World War II to the Second Gulf Conflict, actually. And in the news, in the Statesman Journal, they're talking about a Vietnam War memorial to go down in the Capitol Plaza, or down there in the park, not too far from the World War II memorial. So that's going to be an interesting initiative. Some people fired this up a couple years ago, and some maybe underestimated how much red tape there is in trying to get something built on the Capitol Mall.
Right.
But it sounds like they have some very high and mighty plans, 27,000 square feet, and to honor all those that all those Oregonians that were lost during the Vietnam years. And especially, I wanted to bring that up. You know, we do not have a Vietnam War memorial here in Oregon just yet, but it looks like it's in the works.
Good. And
so
good.
I'm going to check out the Statesman Journal article and learn about that. And I wanted to bring that up because Jerry Hood is with us. And Jerry did serve from 1963 to 67 in the U.S. Marine Corps. Hoorah. Jerry, thanks for joining us here on KYKN.
Thanks for having me.
It's nice to see. So you've been living here for a couple of years at Dallas Retirement. You're obviously retired.
Yeah.
Yeah, and hanging out here. And in the Marine Corps, you served 4 years there. And what an amazing four-year period of time it was, 1963 to 67. How did you end up in the Marine Corps?
I was getting in trouble a lot, going out drinking and whatever. My stepdad told me I was going to join the Army.
He said, yes, Jerry, hey, Jerry, come over here. You're going in the Army.
Yeah.
And you said?
He said, you're going to jail. So I told him, no, I'm not. I'm going in the Marine Corps. Uh-huh. I've been talking with a friend of mine anyhow about doing it. We were going to go in what they had called the buddy system. You know, if you take a buddy with you, you can get whatever drill station you want, and you can stay together.
Okay.
The only trouble was when we took the test to join, he didn't pass, and I did. So.
Oh, whoops. Oh, great. Hey, let's do this all together. But, oh, Jerry, you're going alone.
Yep. And that's what started it. Took a 2 week deferment. I went in on the 13th of September, And they told me I could have 2 weeks to get my stuff together. So I took it, I went home. When I got home, I found out I had a brand new baby sister.
Oh, my goodness. How old are you at this point?
How old was I?
Yeah.
17.
You're 17 years old.
Yeah.
Brand new Minton Marine. Okay.
Well, I had to have my mom co-sign. And
so at 17, you weren't able to enlist yourself. Your mom had to give you permission.
Right.
You're not yet 18 right. years old. Holy cow.
Yeah. It was quite an experience, especially boot camp.
Yeah, I bet. Boot camp for the Marines especially, right? So you served in Vietnam for a year, I think you were saying, during the break.
Yeah, right.
And how was that experience?
Scary at times. Fun at times. I kind of had bad luck. We were stationed at the air base in Da Nang,
mm-hmm.
and we got there just before the monsoon season hit. So it was pretty wet. And when that ended, it seemed like we changed over to July, and they were just going into their monsoon season. So but what I came here to really talk about was the prisoners of war that mm-hmm. are still there. You know, I'd like to see something done. Maybe the president can do like he did with Korea mm-hmm. and bring some of the remains back. I think that'd be a good thing. I think it'd be a good thing for the country, and probably be a good thing for him politically too. You know.
Yes, we're talking to Jerry Hood. Was a PFC, a private first class in the Marine Corps in Vietnam. He's wearing a POW MIA hat. And you're saying it would be really nice if the president and some leadership could go to Vietnam and secure some of the remains of those who are left behind.
As many as they can. I think he's about the only one that's man enough to do it. You know, if he could do that, I'm sure a lot of people would really appreciate it.
Well, if he could do it out of North Korea, you would think you could do it out of Vietnam, right?
Well, I don't see any reason why not.
So when you served, you certainly must have lost some of the people you served alongside and people you were close to, right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, they're on the wall. Yeah.
And at least their names are at least enumerated. And then there's some that, of course, we have the unknown soldier, and we have some that have remains that are still there that never really got that closure.
Yeah. It's just the way, you know, war is. Back then it's not different, but now I wonder why we are ever there, you know, sometimes. And I don't know much about what's going on over in the Middle East, but I don't think we belong there.
Well, that's an entirely different show.
Anyway. Yeah, I can imagine.
Jerry, we're going to have to go. We're on a hard break. We were Jerry Hood, U.S. Marine Corps. We want to thank you for your service on this Veterans Day. We want to thank you for joining us and giving your message for the POWs to be returned. And we'll just do it again next year. Thank you, Jerry.
Hopefully I'll be here.
Happy Veterans Day for everyone. Hey, thanks for joining us. My name is Brent DeHart. I've been here with Dave Bourne at the Dallas Retirement Center. Come check it out if you haven't seen it before. But again, thanks and appreciation to all of you veterans of all services. Have a great day.
Lynn Benton Tractors Newsmakers with Brent DeHart and Dave Bourne. Presented by Les Schwab Tires and sponsored in part by Furbish, a salvage place, and Kennedy Tax Solutions. Live local talk that matters to you from the Capital Auto Group studios exclusively on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.